This episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, the finest pizzeria in all of Guelph, Ontario. They've got delicious gourmet pizzas, or choose from an array of fresh ingredients and make whatever you like. Calzones, wings, panzerotti, salads, breadsticks, garlic bread. Pizza Trocadero has it all. You can find them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph, or visit them online at trocaderoguelph.ca. That's TrocaderoGuelph.ca. Call them at 519-829-2444 for pickup or delivery. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Hello and welcome to episode 253 of this Creative Control with Vish Khanna podcast. I'm Vish. And on the show today, Several Futures, a post-punk band from Toronto, consisting of Johnny Dovercourt, Matt Nish Lapidus, and Evan Davies. Now, Johnny's the driving force behind Toronto's quite celebrated Wavelength concert series, and he and Davies once played together in a band I really, really loved called Republic of Safety. Now, they're joined with Matt here to form this band, Several Futures, and they are playing a bunch of shows over the next little while. They are playing Ottawa's Gaba Hay on May 6th, Montreal's Brasserie Beaubien on May 7th, Peterborough's The Spill on May 13th, and Toronto's Double Double Land on May 26th, all in support of their excellent new album, Before You Forget, which is out now. I recently, not that long ago, I think it was last weekend, I did like a walk and talk with several futures around Toronto, and decided that our destination should be a local pizza place. As you know, if you listen to the show, I have a pizza problem. I really like pizza. I have a pizza sponsor. It's like having a pizza dealer. I just get free pizza whenever I want, and I'm just like a mainlining pizza half the time. You don't even know. Anyway, I have a pizza problem, and I thought I'd let these guys help me get my fix. So we did a walk and talk to a pizza place, and that's what you're going to hear. We're going to talk about the band and culture. These are smart men. I thought it would be fun. So this is myself and several futures walking around Toronto. Enjoy. Hey, Matt, do you live here?
In Toronto?
No, in this house. I assume you live in Toronto.
I do not live in this house.
Who lives in this house?
Just Johnny.
It's just me.
You have your own place?
I have my own place.
You're like a full-grown adult now.
Yeah, I'm paying the price for it.
When's the last time you had a roommate?
Last time I had a roommate? 5 years ago.
Wow, okay. You've been full-on adult for a while.
That's correct.
Not that there's anything wrong with having a roommate. It doesn't make you an adolescent or immature or juvenile, but that is a... Once you stop having roommates, it's a sign of adulthood, I think, on some level.
It's hard to go back.
It's absolutely difficult to go back.
Yeah, it's impossible. Like, once you have your own space and you can do whatever you want with it, how do you share that with somebody?
Well, and then, you know, if you are someone who is a breeder, you partner up and then you just make new horrible roommates. And they know, they leave their stuff everywhere and you're just like, dude, like... You're the worst roommate. My kids are the worst roommates I've ever had.
Yeah, I can believe it.
It's kind of bad. It's kind of bad. Now, Johnny, this is a nice apartment. What area of Toronto are we in technically?
This is Trinity Bellwoods.
Which is named after a park.
The park is like right over there. I'm pointing. You can't see because it's radio, but I'm... No, it's not. It's the online...
No, it's the radio.
It's online radio. I'm pointing east towards the park, Trinity Bellwoods, the namesake park. I live a block away from it.
Now, you've been on the show. This is actually your second appearance on this. We've spoken many times over the years, but this is your second appearance on this show. And as I recall, the first time we actually met at the park.
Yeah, I feel like we did a couple of park interviews, like maybe one about all caps and one about Republic of Safety.
Yeah, Republic of Safety would have been like CFRU, my Mish Vish interracial morning show that I did with my wife. And it was myself and you and Maggie McDonald, right?
Correct.
Yeah, that was around here somewhere.
Oh, that was Dufferin Grove Park, another community-ish, way more community-ish park than Trinity Bellwoods. Bellwoods is sort of known for tall cans of beer and millennials, and Dufferin Grove is more populated by your beloved breeder types.
Right, right, families and stuff. Yeah, right.
If Trinity Bellwoods is Coachella, then Dufferin Grove is Mariposa.
Oh, I was going to say Hillside, but
maybe now.
Well,
I'm
Mariposa.
Sorry,
yeah. No, that's good. You don't have to, don't feel slighted. Don't Hillside, Mariposa, it's fine. Now, we are going to do a walk and talk today little bit because I'm starving and I have another engagement after our interview. Did you guys eat? Are you hungry?
We were going to eat anyway, so I think this is an excellent convergence of plans.
Okay, so where should we go in this neighborhood? Where would be a good place to go?
Well, you'd mentioned something about wanting one of the best pizza slices in Toronto earlier, so we were thinking Bitondo's.
Bitondo's. Now, what I've heard of this, every time I tell people what my favorite slice in Toronto is, because I talk about pizza a little too much on this show, I like Fresca, which is the old Massimo's.
Yeah. They're, especially their Caprese. I used to like... order that for takeout or like pick up home delivery all the time.
Yeah, so Fresca is my slice. It's like Spadina and it's college and Spadina basically. Yeah. So yep. I make a point of going there, but every time I say it to someone in Toronto, they say, "What about Bitondo's?" And I don't think I've ever been. So this is a nice treat for me. I can't wait.
Yeah, this will be great. It's very different than the other place. It's like more kind of old school. You know, Italian American, like New York style slice.
Oh, great. That sounds exciting.
It's super greasy and it's right across the street from the Monarch Tavern, which is a bar, which is increasingly becoming a increasingly used music venue now. So whenever we have a show at the Monarch, we being Wavelength usually, everyone's like, "Oh, I can't wait to have a Bitondo slice for the show." And my friend Adam, he jokes about having what he called a cheese bag, which is basically just like a bag full of cheese and bread, hot cheese and bread.
Well, that sounds kind of good, but also it sounds like it might hurt later.
I always have to warn him, don't go easy on the cheese bag because he might not make it. Through the night.
Can I get like a margarita or something at Bitondo's? Would they have like
they will probably have like a cheese slice. It won't be as fancy as margarita.
I think they have I don't know if they have a veggie slice, but I'm pretty sure they have a cheese slice.
Okay, we're gonna go. You need to put your shoes on at least, John. It's nice out, but it's not that nice.
Don't worry, there's slip-on shoes. It's not gonna slow down the interview.
Okay, so we're gonna take a walk and we'll talk about your band and we'll talk about pizza. And I'm excited because I just like pizza. A lot. Is it? I'm like the cat that likes the pizza. What's his name? Yeah, you know. Wait, no. There's not a cat who likes
the cat
pizza.
Likes lasagna.
There's lasagna, Garfield. Right. That was a weird Italian stereotype that I screwed up. It's vaguely racial there for a second. Who likes pizza? There's somebody who likes pizza, right? Isn't there like a comic or cartoon character that likes pizza? There must be something. Oh, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah. They love pizza.
That's what it is. They really like pizza. Well, I can't wait to do this. Now, Matt, I was thinking about your... Whoa, what the... I'm getting caught in all the microphone cables. Sorry.
This is the most tethered walk I've ever been on.
Yeah, it's going to be a little... It's just like you're my children or something. I think I locked the... Johnny, I can't open the door.
You have to lean on it?
Lean on it?
Lean on it and turn it to the left.
Okay.
There you go.
There, I did it. All right, I unlocked the door. There we go. Now, you guys...
Okay.
There you are. You ready to go, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm coming.
This is nice. It's a lovely day, isn't it?
It's beautiful, yeah.
I got a text message from our drummer, Evan Davies. He said he's at college. He'll be there in 5. Should I just direct him to meet us at Batondo's?
Well, that seems to make the most sense.
All right.
Hey, Matt, be careful. Did you untangle
yourself? Yeah, I just untangled,
okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. Good work. You're like the best production assistant I've ever had on this show. Because a walk and talk is not easy when you've got all these cables and then people look at you.
Like, it's true.
Who do these idiots think they are that they can walk around with a microphone?
I'll be happy if we can clothesline someone with this.
Now, you guys are in a post-punk band. That's what people would say. Several Futures is a post-punk band. How do you feel about that? Is that wrong?
I feel okay about that, I think.
Sure. I mean, punk's almost 40 years old, so lots of things are post-punk.
That's true.
That was a dad joke. Oh. That was like the most music dad joke. I didn't even realize it until after I said it.
I said a dad joke to my kids the other day when they were in the car.
You're a dad. That's okay.
It's okay? Okay. I was pretty happy with it. I said out loud when we were at a four-way stop and someone ran the other stop sign. I said, I guess that guy thought that sign was stoptional.
Oh.
That's really good.
That's not bad, right?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Have you joined Puns Trading Zone yet?
No, there's a Puns Trading Zone.
Yeah. It's the best. It's the best but the worst. It's a good place to like get your dad joke, impulses out, but it also encourages them. So it's a double-edged sword. I'm sure there's a pun in there somewhere, but I didn't have one.
This is a takeoff on Buns Trading Zone?
It's like a subgroup.
It's a pun on Buns Trading Zone.
I was trying to figure out... I was trying to explain Buns Trading Zone to someone the other day, but I couldn't quite do it. Do you guys have a handle on what Buns Trading Zone is?
Of course.
You can swap stuff with people. And although it used to be more like, I'll give you a painting if you mow my lawn. And now it's like just buying stuff for Subway tokens.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a bartering thing?
Yeah.
It's an internet swap group that grew to 36,000 members.
It's a no cash allowed Craigslist.
Yeah, it's a no cash allowed Craigslist where the currency are tokens and tall cans.
Why is it called Buns, B-U-N-Z?
Originally it was Bums, and then someone said that was offensive to homeless people, so they changed it to Buns to be, I don't know, cute and funny.
Oh, I didn't realize that's a weird thing. I didn't know that's a weird part of that history. Anyway, all right, well, I don't mean to just set you up on dad jokes. You're banned.
But it's a good segue, because there is a Buns Trading Zone reference in the lyrics to one of our songs on the new album.
Oh, how does it go? Tell me the lyric.
There's a song, one of the lyrics is, I'll settle for a curb alert.
What is, curb alert, that must have something.
Curb alert is where on Buns you alert someone to like a good find, like someone put a nice shelving unit out on the, or a chest of drawers on the curb, and just to take, so it's a curb alert, go to college in Clinton and get that chest of drawers.
Oh, I didn't realize that's what that meant. Okay, that's really interesting. And what, we're going right here?
Yeah, right here.
Where we're on Dundas and Crawford right now, right?
That's correct.
What can you tell people who are listening about this area? We mentioned there's the park here. There's a woman trying to wrangle three dogs at the same time, which is kind of how I feel right now with all of these microphone cables.
Yeah, I do feel like I'm on a leash a little bit, actually.
Before Trinity Bellwoods Park became known as a sort of like hipster enclave, it was no more in Toronto. It was a dog park, and there was actually a Don McKellar movie in the mid-90s called Dog Park, which was about then sort of 20 or 30-something hipsters, like singles, trying to meet and date through owning dogs in the bowl, which we're looking at right now, which is the depression, like the downhill part of the park, which is the off-leash area for dogs.
And it's still a popular dog park.
It still is, yeah, for sure.
And a popular filmmaking location.
Do you often see people making little movies down here?
Yeah, there's lots of like students that shoot films in here, and in general,
there's lots of
maybe not big name films like Don McKellar.
There's lots of pickup softball, and then the weekends and the summer it becomes a bit of a Coachella scene with people with like, what are those dragon sticks things called? What are those called?
Aren't they just called dragon sticks?
Are they?
No,
is that
I
what they're
know.
Called?
And tightropes or slackline.
Slacklining. There's lots of slack guys with ukuleles.
We're going to cross here.
We're going to cross here. Okay. You know, it's interesting you bring up the notion of Coachella culture or Coachella-like things. It's come up a couple times.
Yeah.
Because, Johnny, you've been making music and curating music for a long time in this city. What does that represent to you, the rise of a Coachella mindset almost?
That's a good question. I think it's just, every sort of generation goes through those kind of like cycles where the sort of subcultural things get become suddenly sort of take over the mainstream. I mean, I think for the 60s generation, it was, Woodstock. And sort of when the suburban kids discover the subcultural things and suddenly it kind of, everything becomes a bit, of a parody of its former self. I think that's just sort of where that's at with just 10 or 15 years of like Brooklyn, Toronto hipster culture is now very much a sort of safe packaged suburban fashion option. Just like something you can buy at H&M.
Right. It was. It felt like the irony of the 90s was a reaction to the sincerity of the 80s. And then they kind of cross-pollinated or something. Is that what happened?
Yeah, so you're saying we have sincere irony now?
Yeah, it's like sincere irony. That's exactly right. I don't know how else to describe it. It's like everything's fairly earnest. Like most of the artists playing Coachella aren't like necessarily novelty acts.
That's true.
And I mean, a lot of the artists that everyone's very impassioned, it seems, about everything. And then it becomes kind of like a weird knot of like, who is just like doing something fun, you know? Everything seems so earnest. And that's, I feel like, where the middle zone is, and that's where the Coachella, like, we can't help but make fun of how earnest everyone is.
But it's also so referential. Like, there's a lot going on now, especially in kind of that level of almost mainstream pop music and the culture around it that is just like a constant remix
right
now. Like, there's not as much anyway of like totally off the wall, crazy, unexpected stuff. It's just kind of like a churn. And like, I've been waiting as I'm getting older, I've been waiting for that moment when I feel like all the music that kids listen to these days sounds like noise, and it's not happening.
It's going the other direction.
Yeah, it's like easy listening now.
I think that the thing that's sort of becoming so hard to comprehend about that sort of like, I don't even know what to call this kind of like convergence of mass culture and underground culture is the kind of weird like reverence of these legacy artists. Like the fact that we're all supposed to get excited about Guns N' Roses getting back together. And we're all supposed to be spending an hour talking about the new Beyoncé album. And it's very, this sort of very sort of reverential consumption of things that used to be a joke to us in the DIY underground.
Like, we're doing kind of this, so that's a weird, you just cited an example of two things happening at the same time. The legacy artist and the superstar. Like, the contemporary superstar elicits 1,000 think pieces, and the return of the legacy act kind of takes over the news cycle for a little while as well. So that's like a weird, I don't know.
It's like time's compressed now, right? Like, and it's, you see this in a lot of arts and culture generally. And it's the, you know, the legacy of postmodernism in some ways, but like we live in kind of a flat time where things don't exist in specific periods anymore. It all just kind of coexists. And because of both the like the popularization of these underground movements, but also the like fractions and how the smallest niche things can now get an audience, we have this explosion of like, you know, people who are into 1930s washboard jazz. And so there's all these new washboard jazz bands and there's an audience for that.
Right.
But like, that's a thing that wouldn't have existed in a kind of more modernist focused era, right? Where there's like this real love of the new. So we've got this like collapse kind of time periods, cultural time periods in some ways.
Now do either of you, I kind of started at this line of discussion by asking Johnny from his vantage point what he made of all of this, but can you think of a starting point or something? Like, do you know what maybe caused this to happen? Do either of you have an idea?
The internet?
Yeah, I think it's a large part of it is probably, yeah.
Yeah, right. The two things, internet and the, which may or may not have sort of caused a lack of generational divide between the current young people and current middle-aged people. Like, I remember being in L.A. In the fall, and I was at Amoeba Music, and noticed that all the pairs of shopping people were a parent and their teenage child who were, like, buying all the same records and getting excited about the same Elton John records.
Right, yeah.
So
is that good or bad?
I think it's fine. I think it's just, it just puts sort of pop music or rock music culture, which thrives a bit on rebellion, into a bit of a mild crisis.
I think there's more than the internet, though. I think part of it is also that like until the 90s, probably, the history of recorded music and popular music was still really short.
Yeah. Right.
Right. And so now there's so much existing music,
which is so accessible.
Yeah, which is so accessible that it's like becoming more, you know, it's easy to discover things that already exist that you didn't know you loved. And there's more old stuff surfacing than there is new stuff being produced.
Right, right, exactly. Because on some level, some of us and some of the people that are in charge of the marketplace may well be out of energy. I was going to say out of ideas, but they might actually be out of energy to invest in these new ideas, right?
I think that's part of it. And in some ways, the business realities of music have changed a lot. And, you know, the organizations that are heavily invested in making a profit off of this stuff need to have a safe return. So they do what's safe.
Right. Because no one really knows what's going to take. So it's kind of like the 90s where there was that feeding frenzy on all the underground rock. But it seems a bit tempered now, where like people seem willing to try to invest a little bit in something in hopes that it will take. But they don't really, there seem to be less. There seems to be less of a curatorial knowledge about it. It just whatever takes, I think.
And it's just sort of back then it was you know, like underground zines causing bands with hardly any draw to get $250,000 record contracts with major labels, and now it's like bands with hardly any draw getting stereo gum features that lead them to overpriced festival plays. So it's kind of, in the ways it's kind of the same. It's just sort of shifting one like gambling system to another.
Totally. Now, I will note that Johnny and I are currently on a sidewalk, and Matt has been relegated to a road where cars
are
actually
on the road. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Matt should be. Come on, Matt. Come up.
It's
come
all right.
Up here with us.
I don't mind walking.
Get
on the road.
Stage, buddy. There you go. That's much better. Now we've
keep
talked.
Him on a tighter, keep him on a tighter leash.
Yeah.
I gave him the long leash. Yeah. It's true. How does any of what we just discussed end up informing what you guys are doing in this band, Several Futures? Because it seems to me that you're probably like me in your late 30s, early 40s maybe, and you're making
maybe
we'll keep the illusion alive that maybe you're in your 20s, who knows, but you know, you're at a place where you're making music that is important to you, obviously, and I think probably echoes some formative influences in your life, maybe more so than what's going on now, but that can be. But it still sounds fresh. It still sounds good. Can you talk a little bit about how this band came together and whether you had sort of discussions about what you wanted to do, that kind of thing? Matt, do you want to start?
Sure, yeah. I mean, all of us have played together in different formats over the years. Oh, there's Evan walking towards us.
Oh, is Evan your drummer?
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
So we've all played together in different ways.
Uh-huh.
And I think the three of us always seem to come back together because of those shared foundation interests. You know, there's certain bands that we all love and find interesting, but we also have really diverse musical taste, which I think is also like something that bonds us really nicely. Like we're not stuck in one genre in terms of our interests necessarily, and we like to try and bring some of those things into the music. But so Evan and Johnny played together in Republic of Safety. And then Evan and I played together in this band called This Mess.
And at the same time, at the same time as Evan and I, and this is Evan, our drummer, please meet Vish Khanna.
Oh, hi, Evan. How are you?
Vish. Nice to meet you, Evan.
Have we met before?
I don't know.
You look familiar to me. Anyway.
Evan played drums in Republic of Safety.
Yes, that's right. So I would have been wah, like cheering for you in the darkness. Okay. A lot. And I don't do that anymore. Your darkness is safe. Don't worry. Sorry.
So go back 10 years or so ago, I was actually playing in two bands at the same time. I was in Republic of Safety with Evan and Maggie and Kat and Kate. And at the same time, I was in Three Ring Circuits with Matt here yeah. and our friend Dean. So sort of doing, balancing sort of political, vocally charged dance punk with like instrumental electronic post rock.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. And then, I don't know, we just kind of played together in different ways over the years. So Johnny and I had an improvised experimental guitar duo for a while called Hybrid Moments.
Mm-hmm.
And like I mentioned, Evan and I were in a punk band called This Mass. And then when that kind of dissolved, it felt like a good time to get back together, and
right.
the three of us started playing, and it felt really natural right away. Like we didn't really discuss the sound outright. We had some ideas about where we wanted to go, and then it just, I mean, in some ways it just kind of happened.
So the foundation is friendships and sort of mutual experiences, whether that's listening to the same stuff or attending the same shows.
I think a lot of it is, yeah.
Well, I mean, we all like share like pretty common taste in music, and that's obviously a pretty good starting point for doing something creative, is if y'all like the same stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
can nerd out about it. And I hadn't, I'd actually, before we started, I hadn't played in a band in a few years. I think it had been 3 or 4 years that I just sort of hadn't done it. I was tired. I needed a break. You know, I'd spent a big chunk of my life doing it, and I just took a break from it. And then I needed to come around to the point where I missed it. I also hadn't been playing bass, and I picked up the bass and realized how much I missed it. And around the same time, I went for a beer with Matt, and Matt was saying, I want to start a new band that's sort of a cross between Sonic Youth and Glenn Branca. Or no, it was like Glenn Branca meets No Means No, or
yeah, something like that.
Oh, interesting. That's an interesting starting point.
And I was like, I'm in. So it was pretty easy after that for us to get started.
Evan, it's nice to meet you again. I guess like we were just discussing, I probably saw you play, but I don't know that we've interacted too much. How's your day going?
It's been long, but good. Thanks. How about you?
But not bad. What were you up to today?
I was just working.
Where do you work?
I work at a PR and marketing company.
Oh, that yeah. sounds evil. Who do you do PR and marketing for? Can you say?
Probably shouldn't.
You shouldn't say yeah. who they are. Okay, yeah. That sounds well. That's a hard day. You're a creative guy then? You write?
Yeah, I'm a writer there.
You write copy?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Now, we were just, before you joined us, we were talking about, I've been to Betondos. I totally forgot.
What a bait and switch.
I totally forgot that I went here after some of the events at the Monarch. I totally blanked on that. That's fine.
Well, we could switch gears. There's San Francesco right across the street there.
No. It's fine. Well, is it good?
I haven't had pizza there in a long time.
I don't think it's as good as Betondos.
No,
I'm such an idiot.
Their sandwiches are really good.
Yeah, I can vouch for their sandwiches.
I'm such an idiot that I thought I hadn't eaten here. That's why we came. And I was like, I always hear about it. And I have had it. Yeah. It's all right.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's no Frescas. It's not like the place I like to go, but it's good. We're gonna try it out.
Okay.
Anyway, before we go in there, mm-hmm. Talk about, these guys kind of established it, but can you talk about how you came to play with these guys and what drives you to play kind of stuff?
Oh, okay. Well, when I first started playing with Johnny, we just sort of met randomly. I used to work at a cafe at U of T down at the St. George campus, and we would chat, and then sort of realized that my roommate at the time was friends with Johnny. So blah, blah, blah. We hit it off,
right,
and
sure.
then talked about music, and I was probably playing a lot of music at the cafe at the time and sort of like struck up conversations that way.
I think you were playing Converge.
Stuff like that, yeah. That would have been like.
Yeah. This was a heavy band. You were playing Converge in a cafe.
I was probably, yeah.
I think that's why I was like, hey man, who is this?
Because
it was wasn't Bjork or whatever.
Yeah, sure. It wasn't normal cafe fare. Okay, yeah. It wasn't a Starbucks you were working at. Probably.
No. It was like a student dive cafe.
Okay, yeah. All right. Well, so you could play Converge. Okay.
We did that with Republic for quite a while. Took a break and bounced around playing in other sort of like genre bands for a time, but nothing really clicked like it did there.
Right.
So I wanted to play again. I wanted to play like music that I enjoyed playing. And so Johnny and I had tea one afternoon and sort of I expressed my desire to do so, and then he put me in touch with Matt, and we started going from there. And as for the other question, like what sort of drives me to play?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's catharsis.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know. I feel like sort of. Even if my sort of flat tone deceives what I'm about to say, I tend to bubble over creatively a lot of the time, so I just need outlets for that.
Right.
Do you remember the Republic of Safety song Vacation?
Yes, of course.
You know, the guy goes, if you like it so much, to quit your job.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like that. Was that your Maggie McDonald?
No, that's Evan.
Oh, that was you saying it. Yeah, oh, yeah. I didn't realize that.
I was the one who's screaming.
I didn't realize
that.
According to Johnny, you sound a bit like a Muppet.
Well, yeah. I've been called worse.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, you guys, and would you have played the show at Hillside?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good.
Yeah,
I
think that was one of our last shows.
Yeah,
in that lineup.
Yeah. I think I was involved at the time with the festival, and I guess I still am. So I've really fought to have you guys play, and
that's
then
neat. Yeah.
And then I heard you're kind of done. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
that
was, yeah. Well, we kind of like regrouped in a different format after that, but it sort of limped to the finish after that.
The music changed. The stylistic stuff was happening.
Yeah,
correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Just a little anecdote about Hillside, because you know how they would pair up bands, so you would do your set,
the workshops,
and so I don't remember who they were. I think they were from somewhere in Europe,
Danish dub band.
Yeah. So,
I wonder who that would have been.
They we were sort of like introduced, and then at the same time, basically, like, okay, go on stage and play. And I don't know, maybe we just weren't feeling it after like a day of like being out in the sun.
Oh, it was a bad experience?
No. I'm not going to say it was a bad experience. I'm going to say it was like an unexpected experience. And they were pretty precious about their instruments and who was playing what.
Oh, yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
And so we kind of dubbed out. How would you describe the dubbing that we did?
I don't
did?
Know. We tried to make everything. We ended up sort of making everything sound like the Stereo MCs. Just sort
of yeah.
Like, I think that they were like, we ended up just giving up trying to play any instruments, and we just started singing and rapping really badly.
Oh, yeah.
And so I took like lead vocal duties because the drummer from these dudes, it was basically like, no, you can't touch my stuff. And so I kind of parody might be a way to describe the way I approach vocal.
Okay, so in fact it wasn't bad. It was fun. It was memorable and fun.
Yeah,
it was fun.
And I mean the weird part was like I'd had a few drinks, I think, so I'd like close my eyes, and when I opened them again after like a few minutes, there were like, I don't know, 100 people just sort of like dancing and grooving.
Yeah. That's what happens at those workshops. Yeah. They're kind of fun. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
It's not bad at all. It's surreal.
I'd love to hear a recording of it, because I recall some parts of it being actually kind of good in a sort of weird Stereo MCs way. Like, I think I was playing some guitar, but kind of doing a sort of just jagged Gang of Four thing. Evan was rapping, and like Laura Barrett and our bassist Marlena were doing like sort of like these like harmony vocals.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there probably is a recording of it. Yeah, I could try to track it down.
Let's premiere that on the next Creative Control.
We could do a remix of it for our next release.
Yeah, your next record. Yeah. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
Now, okay, do you want to let's go order
some
food.
Yeah, I will eat a pizza slice.
Do you want to have a slice? Let's see what they say in here. They're going to be okay, I'll warn you guys. Sometimes people are really into this and sometimes they get really weirded out that I got microphones and I'm talking to them cuz they don't want to get in trouble. Their boss isn't there. So let's just play this by ear. Let's just pretend the microphones aren't even there and see what they say.
Sure.
Okay, I'm just giving you a warning here.
Okay.
Sure. Okay, let's see what happens. Hello. Oh, someone's on the phone here, so then we can't even order. What do you normally? Do you come here all the time?
I get the pepperoni slice.
You get the pepperoni? What do you get, Johnny?
Well, it doesn't look like there's anything but pepperoni, is there?
Oh, is that right?
There's pepperoni and there's calzones, it looks like.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's find out what's in the calzone. I had a calzone, I think, the last time I was here. It's probably just cheese or something. Anyway, I'll figure it out. It'll be fine. She'll tell us. We'll find out if there's any vegetarian options, right? Evan, what do you eat? Do you eat anything?
It sounds kind of funny. I'm kind of not doing the carb thing.
That's fine. I'm sorry. Was that you just feel weird divulging that personal information?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Well, you look great. If that's what you're going for, don't.
Are you on paleo, dude?
No, I would never call it that.
Are you on the Atkins diet?
Nothing, no diet, no ism or specific.
Evan thing. Refuses to be labeled.
Yeah, that's right.
Like you're on some post-punk diet.
No. I just want to eat vegetables and and less carbs.
Okay, that's a good idea.
What would the post-punk diet be?
I'd be probably pretty angry and...
It would be, I think, like cheap beer, I don't know, tall boys of 50 and...
You think?
Yeah, probably.
I want to ask you guys about...
And sorrow, I don't know.
But like vegan heartache.
Vegan heartache, interesting. I would say they have that on the menu. Vegan heartache.
Like palm frond sandwiches, I don't know. I just made that up.
Hi. Sorry, we're just doing a little podcast here, and my name's Vish. How are you? You probably don't want to talk, right? Do you get in trouble? Will you get in trouble?
No, I just not want to do this kind of
thing. You don't like talking on microphones?
No.
Okay, that's fine. So people can't hear it, but she's like, no. No, no. That's fine.
That makes me sound bitchy.
No, not at all. They don't know who you are. It's fine.
It was nicer than that.
No, it was totally nice. Sorry. Do you have anything vegetarian here yet?
The Panzerotti's are just cheese.
Okay, cheese and sauce?
Yes.
Okay, I will have one of those. And then these guys are going to order.
I'm going to have a pepperoni slice.
Same here. Pepperoni slice, please.
Okay, so two slices of panzerotti?
Yeah, that sounds great. And Evan, no carbs, right. Okay. We'll take it outside. Yeah, we'll take it outside, yeah. All right, so do you want me to get... Here, you... I also have limited...
I have. I'm sure she can make change.
Yeah, we'll do it. It's fine.
Here. Whoa. You can pay for mine.
Can you pay for mine?
Sure.
How much is the... Cheese panzerotti, $6.50. Okay, here. Hang on. What's that? It's just my podcast. These are my guests. These guys play in a band called Several Futures. No, she doesn't want to talk on the record. That's fine. The show is called Creative Control. It has two K's. At the beginning, not just randomly.
About food or like Toronto? Or?
It's about music and culture and some food. Anything, really, yeah.
Together.
Yeah,
together.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
I kind of want a drink. Should I get a drink?
Yeah, I do it.
What are you going to get? I got a long night. Maybe I should actually get a caffeine drink.
Can I grab a... What do you want?
Yeah, I don't want to say their name, but the... May I get a sugared cola? A regular cola that... I don't want to say the brand name. Okay, so I'm going to get a cola. Those guys never paid their bills for my ad sponsorship.
Whoa. Oh, wow.
So yeah. I don't want to give them a credit. No. Why would I get them to do that?
And I'll have a...
This red and white cola looks delicious. Thank you.
Cola.
Thank you. And this is the Panzerotti? Okay. Thank you so much.
$2.50.
Oh, well, this is going to be... Okay. Okay, let's go outside. Thanks, Johnny.
No problem.
Okay, we'll go outside and we'll find a seat. Thank you.
There's a bench right here.
Oh, yeah, a bench. Why don't we sit on the bench? Okay, so why don't you sit beside Evan?
Yep.
I'll sit beside Johnny. Oh, look at this bench.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now we're talking.
Now we're cruising here. You guys got slices. I got a panzerotti.
Here, Evan can hold the mic while
that's right. Yeah, I don't have that option here. That's fine. I'll chomp on stuff while we're talking. One of the things, we were just alluding to the fact, making some post-punk jokes, which is fine. And again, I don't want to label you. Does that term bother you that it might be associated with your band?
Not at all. I mean, post-punk is my jam. Like, it's probably like my favorite style of music, and I have no issue being described that way. I think that maybe there's a anytime you use a genre signifier, there's always a worry that someone's gonna misunderstand what you're doing and associate it with something else in their brain. Because what I think of as being post-punk might be different from what most people think of. But I think it was a really important era for me in music. Sort of like punk being this sort of like moment of liberation from sort of music industry confines. But still, a lot of the original punk bands were still kind of just Chuck Berry-ish, rock and roll. But then in post-punk, there was this like just flowering of creativity and all these different types of styles of music making, and were just sort of absorbed by the energy of punk to make some pretty like timeless music. So
what's interesting to me about it also is that post-punk, even though we think about it as something that happened after punk, a lot of the bands were around at the same time or even earlier.
Right.
And they just didn't get their records out in time. Like, this could have been the other way around if they had been more on the ball. But some of those bands, like This Heat and, some of the more experimental bands, started up in like 75, 76.
Right.
Or even earlier.
And things like Devo and Perubu were before 73,
74, yeah.
75, so.
Right, but they got kind of lumped into New Wave or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, they didn't get their first albums out till 78, 79, and by that time it was too late.
Was it the same thing, do you think, that happens now where the record plants are over, like they're busy and people can't get their records out, and then because you wait so long, you're classified in a whole new genre of music? That's entirely possible.
It's also this. There was no independent record label infrastructure yet, really, to speak of. So a lot of people were still dependent on major labels and their fickleness. So
that could have been it too. Now, one of the reasons I bring this up is because we were just making jokes about post-punk and how kind of dark it is. Several Futures is actually a very optimistic name to me. I was thinking about it, and I was like, Several Futures. That seems promising. It doesn't seem dark and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, the music that you make has a darkness to it and an edge to it, but what does that mean? What does that sentiment mean to you?
Well, the name, I mean, it's I don't know if I'd go as far as to say it's optimistic, but it's non-deterministic.
Sure.
It actually comes from a short story called The Garden of Forking Paths by Jorge Luis Borges.
Okay.
Which was a story, it's a very short story, but it's a story about kind of the convergence of different possibilities around unpredictable events. And it was one of the first stories that's credited with kind of being a non-linear postmodern kind of fiction coming out of the modernist era.
Okay, so do some of these eventualities actually have a bleak tone to them? Like, are you reading about multiple futures, so to speak, when you're reading this story? Is that...
Yeah, I mean, the story is pretty dark. It's kind of a bleak story.
I think in terms of how we interpret the name, I think it's, for me, it's sort of like that every day your sort of perspective on the future changes. It's just like when, you know, you have days where you're like, oh my God, today's the day I'm going to figure everything out, and we're all going to figure everything out. We're going to solve all our problems. We're going to like make some amazing technological fix for climate change, and we're going to live in this socialist utopia. And other days where you're just like, oh my God, you know, like the end is nigh. Chances are we're not going to make it. Civilization is doomed. All these like apocalyptic movies are like seeming less and less fictional. So I think that just that sense of sort of schizophrenia about the future fits, like, plays into our music.
Right, and it's also open to different possibilities. Sorry. Though
generally speaking, I kind of like the name because conceptually it's so open to interpretation.
Yeah.
As well, so I mean, just anybody could sort of envision whatever that means for
themselves. I don't make a habit of asking bands about their band names. It has happened on the show.
Yeah.
But I just thought of what you're doing and what that name connotes. Because on some level, you know, we name things because we have to name them.
Yeah.
But sometimes they have meaning, and sometimes they might be an umbrella concept, right? Mm. So when I heard Several Futures, it didn't occur to me until I was listening to your records again today. I'm just like, wow, this is so spirited. Some people would view it as angsty, and yet it seems open. It seems like, I mean, even within, between the EP and the record, there's a lot of invention. There's a lot of like sonic things that change within the band, and yep. I can hear different influences. So I like that openness.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I think the name appealed to me and probably to us, partly because we live in this weird time. Like we were talking about before, you know, this like kind of like weird collapse of cultural eras and the uncertainty around like, Are we moving into a major utopian period where we're going to solve all these big problems and everything's going to be awesome? Or are we about to wipe ourselves off the face of the earth within our lifetime?
Yeah.
And we don't know. It could go either way. But I think there's a general feeling that we're living in a time of transformation, like when something big is going to happen and going to change, and it's going to happen fairly soon, whatever it is.
It's kind of funny you say this, because I kind of feel like we do know how it's going to end up, because the scientists keep telling us we're effed. So everyone's
that's true.
You never know what's going to happen, but that's not actually true. We do know what's going to happen. Things are bleak. It's not Several Futures.
Things are fairly bleak.
It is one future, and we're all doomed. And thanks a lot, guys. Thanks a lot for reminding us. Now, do you actually feel like there's a chance we might all survive, that the world, Johnny, is going to be fine in the end?
Vish, it's too early.
How's your pizza?
Full of of carbohydrates and climate change.
Evan, how are you doing with just the air that you've been sucking?
I'm great. I've been grazing all day.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So you seem like you're in good shape. Now, do you... Go ahead, Johnny.
If I can answer that sincerely, then I agree with Matt says that it is weird, the sort of convergence of all these things in terms of technology and environmental situations and just the rapid change of society. It feels like we are in the verge of something crazy, and maybe it is the singularity, or maybe it is like ecological collapse, or maybe it's both, or maybe there's a chance that we can figure out some kind of a solution. It feels like it feels like the 20th century is finally fading away, and it's weird that like all these sort of like celebrity deaths have happened this year. And back to the thing we were talking about Coachella, is like, you can sense, like, did you hear about that new festival that they're trying to do, which is going to be like all the soon to be dead rock stars, like The Who and Paul McCartney and who else, like
Bob Dylan, the Rolling Stones.
Yeah. And it's like, it just seems to be this, we're just grasping onto the last sort of threads of 20th century pop culture before like time catches up with everyone, and there's a weird ghoulishness to it. And I feel like in a way we're seeing this kind of generational turnover, where in a few years we're actually going to be in the 20s, like we're going to be into like well into the 21st century, and there aren't going to be as many people around who even remember
21st.
Did I say 20th? I did.
Speaking of guys trapped in the 20th century.
21st century. And that's, you know, and like I think a lot of people don't actually think about the future as being like the place we're going to live, and the fact that we're soon going to be in a new decade that's going to really establish us as being in the 21st century. And that's going to be different, I think.
Yeah. Now, how does this manifest? You guys are clearly thinking about what's going on in the present tense. I get the impression that in some of your music, you're trying to highlight the fact that some of us maybe aren't thinking as much about what's going on now. Is that fair? Does that come across in your music?
I think that's a lyrical sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, our apart from our musical shared interests that drew us together, we also have topical shared interests, which include things like science fiction and urbanism and you know, these kinds of topics that are really focused on thinking about where we live, how we live, why we live this way, where we might be going in that regard.
Yeah.
And that definitely makes it into our lyrical content and probably the overall tone of the music. And this conversation we've just been having about not knowing where we're going, the first thing that popped to mind for me was William Gibson's newest book, The Peripheral, which is an amazing piece. I think it's as revolutionary as Neuromancer was in the 80s. What he uses is this device to predict some sort of massive shift in the world in terms of the environment, technology, and culture. And he just calls it... I can't remember what he calls it. Anyway, even better, because if you haven't read it, then spoiler. You don't know.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's this unexplained thing. It's like an event.
Yeah.
And it just happens. And this is post-event.
That's a lot of what we're seeing in popular culture. There are TV shows, there are movies about a specific cataclysmic event. I mean, this has been going on for decades, but it seems like more and more people are embracing this notion that we are in some form of end time, and no one knows exactly how these end times are going to manifest themselves.
So what's interesting about
his... existential crisis, really.
Yeah, and what's interesting about his version of this event is that it's not a natural disaster or something. It's like a technological invention that changes everything we know about the world and how we live in it.
Right.
And ultimately ends up in a world that is equally utopia and dystopia in the same way that ours is now. You know, I think one of the things that...
Spoiler, thanks, Matt.
Well, no, that's not a spoiler at all. That's in, like, the first page. You'll
okay.
see. That
might have been a life spoiler.
Not
even a book spoiler. That's, like, that's probably what's going to happen.
That's kind of what's in some of our music, I think, in some of our lyrics, is this notion that it's not utopia or dystopia. It's just, like, this is the world, and it's changing... We don't know exactly how it's going to change. It's probably not all going to be good or bad.
Yeah.
And what
might that look like, and how can we think about that based on what we do now and where we're living now?
Right.
And to bring it back to our music, what I like about what we do is that we don't like bring songs into the space. We like write our songs based on a collective improvisation, and in some ways sort of almost instant composition. Like the three of us have been playing together for so long that we can communicate like musically very quickly and communicate changes and pick up on what the other is doing in a very fast way. And we can have these long, like sprawling 30-minute jams that we thankfully record usually and have lots of good bits we can pull out and then restructure into actual songs. And I think that we both know if something's getting too dark or doomy, we know how to suddenly pull it into an unexpected major key change that's going to suddenly lift your mood and take the song in a whole new direction, or take the piece or jam or whatever we're doing into a whole new direction.
Right. You guys, because all of you have been making music for so long, you have been part of different musical communities here, you know, as things ebb and flow. You guys just, and I'm curious about where you think this band fits in the contemporary Toronto music community, because as you're outlining some of your lyrical motifs, as you're outlining some of the sonic sensibilities that you guys share in the band, I wonder if you feel like you do have contemporary, because we also established you're a little bit older. Let's not mince words here.
There's lots of older rocker dudes now. I think it's the norm.
Yeah, sure. So I'm just curious. Like, do you who would you count among your contemporaries? How are you feeling about Toronto's arts community as it stands? Because at least I know that Johnny, and in your work, you guys in your bands, I do know this about Johnny, is like to me a pivotal figure in the rise of Toronto's underground arts community. So I'm just, that's why I value his perspective on some of these things. And I'm just curious if you can, maybe Matt or Evan, if you can comment on where you feel your band fits in the grand scheme of things in Toronto.
I wouldn't know.
Evan,
do you
pay attention to such things?
Not as much as I used to. I mean, I was a music journalist for a long time. And I guess, you know, that was part of my job to pay attention to it. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to stay on top of that, you know?
Sure.
I don't know.
Well, and I mean, you occupy, and Johnny also was a journalist as well, you occupy an interesting realm because you're on both sides of it, right?
Yeah.
You're on both sides of the cycle of consumption, production, and like, I mean, as a person in Toronto, do you feel like the city's in a good place in terms of what's going on, arts and culturally?
From what I can comprehend and pay attention to, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Matt, how do you feel?
It's an interesting question because, I mean, there's certainly some bands that we love and we've played with a bunch of times and are awesome, like Not Of and Champion Lover and, you know, bands I would think of as kind of our contemporaries doing not dissimilar things.
Right.
We're all kind of similar age, too.
Yeah, that's true. We're similar aged. And then, you know, you also have a rise of a few, you know, skyrocketing Toronto rock bands like Metz, who are also not playing in a totally different realm than us.
No, yeah, and almost of the same vintage, really, same
not
age.
Spring chickens, neither.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, in some ways, they're contemporaries, although they're doing it at like a whole other level than we are at the moment.
Right.
So there's definitely a thing here, but there's also a lot of different scenes, and you know, one of the things that drew us together, actually, back like 15 years ago, when we were all hanging out at Wavelength all the time, was the diversity of the music that was brought together on those nights, and how you'd have like electronic and hip hop and punk and all these bands kind of mingling together and doing their thing all together and equally respected and that variety of taste. And I still like that about the Toronto music scene. Like there's still tons of different interesting stuff going on. I love a lot of the more experimental side of things. So,
right.
Like, Joe Strutt has this night called Track Could Bend that I try to go to when I can.
Joe Strutt is the founder of the Mechanical Forest.
Mechanical Forest Sound, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He records, he tends to record
does,
a lot of concerts. Yeah.
But so he has his own night now, which is like all improvised experimental music that's really cool. There's Feast in the East, which is great. There's a lot of really good events, and of course Wavelength is still going and awesome.
Right. Okay.
So it
just feels vibrant to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Johnny, I want to ask about Wavelength stuff briefly, but I also kind of want to know what's in store for Several Futures over the next little while. Is there a way for you to talk about both of those things?
I think so. I actually kind of wanted to answer the where do we fit in the music scene question first, if I may. And it's kind of, it's for me as artistic director of Wavelength, which is as a sort of ongoing project in a way, Wavelength, this as the series, tries to be about the entire Toronto music scene. Like as we try to be as wide, have as wide and diverse a vision as possible, which sometimes can be a bit of a kind of Atlas-like task, you know, because a bit of weight on our shoulders. And for me, being in this band is actually great because it's me not having to worry about the rest of the music scene. It's just being able to do my thing with my friends and follow a creative path without worrying about where it fits and what scene we're part of. And sure, and we've, you know, we've discovered some fellow travelers, like some of the, you know, similar-minded bands that, like Matt mentioned, like Not Of or Champion Lover or Two Koreas or Miko Cheech. There's lots of other people who are just trying to do something similar. And it seems like there's so many, especially a lot of guys who are like in their 30s, well past their, you know, age of 35, who are just still doing it, still just making music and putting it out however they can. And in a way, it's not that we've given up, it's just that the idea of taking it to that career level of that like international touring level is maybe we've all accepted that that's likely out of reach or maybe not going to happen. And that in a way is also kind of liberating because it's just lets us just focus on the actual music making and finding our own voice as artists.
Now, I appreciate that response, and I want to find out what's next for your band, and if you want, you can talk about some Wavelength stuff as well. I will say that you guys have all eaten your pizza, and I've had my hands full with
did
this
you
microphone.
Yeah, you chewing sounds on the...
I did get a bit, but I was actually hoping, Johnny, that you could, in fielding this question, yeah. Take the microphone, take over the mic stand duties that I've been taking on, so that I haven't touched it. If both of you want to also talk about how your baton dose slices were in more detail, that would be great.
It was exactly what I was expecting it to be and hoping for. It was an old school slice of pizza that you fold in half and it kind of drips on you while you eat.
I was so single-mindedly focused on devouring my slice that I wasn't even aware you hadn't touched your Panzerotto. So.
My Panzerotto is basically a folded up slice. I've just had my first bite. It's okay.
I think that's what Adam Bradley would call a cheese bag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, it is.
Plans for this band? Well, we're doing some touring really soon. At least we're spending May doing some shows around the province. Well, we're playing Ottawa on May 6th, and then we're playing Montreal, which I guess is out of the province, on May 7th. And then we're playing Peterborough May 13th. And then we're back in Toronto to play Double Double Land on May 26th with Fetnat, who are also like a really, really cool band from Quebec from Hull, who are just kind of like older dudes who are just doing their own thing because they don't care anymore. I mean, not in a good way. Like they don't care about what's popular. They're just doing what they like. Mm-hmm.
They vaguely remind me of like the Jesus Lizard and... I don't know what the other thing is, but the singer who sings like he's a francophone singer. He has a bit of Yao in him.
Yeah, and what's really funny about Fetnat is that they're like barely known in Toronto, but they're huge in Guelph. Have you noticed that? There's like, and there is this like Canadian thing happening, which is really cool. Like, there's this Canadian indie like confidence that doesn't necessarily have to do with Toronto or the bigger centers. And I mm-hmm. think that's really refreshing in terms of where the scene is going. But in terms of the plans for our band, I don't think we don't have grand plans, but we're definitely going to make another album. We're going to start once we're done promoting this one. We're going to probably start working on the next one pretty soon. And we also want to have a chance to explore a bit more of our improvised side.
Yeah, and we actually have our next release is likely going to be a 50-minute improvised set that we did as a film accompaniment back in December.
In St. Catharines.
We're just kind of finishing the mixing and editing on that now, and that'll probably be the next thing we put out. But no ETA yet.
Well, that's great to hear. That's nice to hear. And where can people learn more about your band on the internet? Because I think you have a Bandcamp page. I understand you have a cheese bag page.
I'm actually going home to register cheesebag.com right now.
Yeah, I feel like we can put a photo of me up there right now eating this cheese bag. It's good. It's actually pretty good, this Baton Dose Panzerotti.
I think we have all the platforms. We have a SoundCloud, we have a Twitter, we have a Facebook. Everything's, luckily it's like a pretty uncommon name, so everything's / several futures. There is like some, I think like Nigerian electro artist called Several Future.
Like, oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, with just singular.
That's cool. We should do a show together.
That was the closest. Finding this band name was really hard. We spent a long time.
We did,
I think I was a bit of a fascist, too. I was like shooting down everything. I'm like, nope. We're not going to settle for a half-assed name.
Good. Don't settle on the name because you're stuck with it.
Yeah, I do recommend that from experience. For the younger viewers wanting you like how to advice on their band, don't settle for a shitty band name.
Because even if you change it later, no one will know. It won't matter.
Yeah, it's true.
Okay.
What's up for Wavelength? That was your question. Camp Wavelength is our summer festival that we're planning right now. That's going to be in August on Toronto Island. And that's our main thing. We're also going to be collaborating with some other Ontario festivals to make a new alliance called SOFA, the Small Ontario Festival Alliance. That's pretty cool.
Do you remember the band from Montreal, SOFA?
Of course, Constellation Records founder Ian Alasky's band.
It was a great band.
Yeah, it was a great band. That was, I think, the first Constellation band.
Very first release on Constellation, yeah. And they played Guelph, actually.
You know what's funny is, speaking of Constellation, is when we heard the band Ought, when they first put out their record, like their first album 2 years ago, loved that record. And I was like, all right, these guys are like us, man. They're like old. They're like, you know, these guys are like 37. And then I saw them and they're all like 20. And I was like, you bastards. How can you like be so young and sound so seasoned?
Yeah, those guys are, that's like one of the best bands going right now.
And, yeah, they're great.
And they're so young and so good, and I love them. So I'm glad, and I could see, you guys should share a bill with Ott.
Yeah, we were supposed to open for them, but then one of us was away.
Oh, that's
it with me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that. All right, well, this has been fun, guys. Thank you for being on the show. Evan, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Matt, it's been nice having you. Now, is there a song from the band that we can go out on right now? Who wants to pick? Do you want to decide amongst yourselves while I eat this cheese bag?
I think you should play the Lost Dreams 4, Further Out.
Now, this is a suite.
It's the last song in the four-song suite, the Lost Dreams suite.
What can you tell us about this, Matt? What can you say about this song?
This song is the longest on the record. It's a bit of a magnum opus. It was very much inspired by kind of the Glenn Branca guitar orchestra kind of style of minimalism, like brutalist minimalism. And it's about dreams.
Okay. Lost Dreams 4, Further Out by Several Futures. Gentlemen, this was an honor and a pleasure. Thank you for taking me to Botondo's and walking and talking with me in Toronto. And I wish you the best of luck, and I hope we talk again soon.
Thanks. Yeah, let's do it again soon.
That was brand new music by Several Futures from their new album, Before You Forget. That was Lost Dreams 4, Further Out. Thanks to Johnny, Matt, and Evan for being on the show and walking and talking. Did you notice that I seemed a little winded at various points during this episode? I need to start working out or something. It's because I eat so much pizza, and I'm walking to pizza. I'm winded just from walking around now and talking to people. That's not good. I could hear it. It's not healthy. I got to fix things. I really do. I got to stop doing stuff and start doing stuff. That's how you fix things now. You stop one thing and you start other stuff, and that's how you get better. Thanks to Several Futures for being on the show. Go see them. They're playing a bunch of shows, as I mentioned at the top of the show. So, go see them. They're great. As you hear this, I am in St. John's, Newfoundland for the Lanya Vanya Festival, so that's really exciting for me. If you're in St. John's, come say hello, of course, and come out to our live taping at the Rocket Room on Friday, May 6th at 9 p.m., I believe. It was supposed to be 8 p.m., and then it got moved to 9 p.m. Show up around 8, just to be safe. We're doing a live talk show taping, and I believe the band Braids are among my guests and everyone else. I think I know who they are, but I don't know off the top of my head. I know Braids are going to be on the show, so that'll be fun. They haven't been on the show in a while. I like Braids. So I wanted to mention that, and what else is going on? Well, nothing really. I want to tell you that if you want to download or subscribe to the show, like download episodes, stream the episodes of the show, go to iTunes, audioboom.com, vishkana.com. Go to patreon.com if you want to make a flexible monthly donation to the program, keep the show going, the podcast. We could use your help. And the show is on Facebook. There's a Facebook page, Creative Control of Vish Khanna, there. And then also on Twitter, at Vish Creative. I'm on Twitter, at Vish Khanna. Follow me. Why not? That'll be fun. And, of course, special thanks, as always, to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph for airing the show every Wednesday at noon Eastern Standard Time on the radio and also around the world at CFRU.ca. Oh, there is one other thing. There was something on the tip of my tongue. You don't even have to be in Canada. I am appearing on an episode of the CBC Radio 1 show, Tapestry, which has some kind of online home. You can listen to my appearance using the www. But if you want to listen to it on the radio, it airs on Sunday, the 8th? May 8th. I think it's 2 p.m. It depends where you live. It can't be 2 p.m. for everyone. You could live in a place where 2 p.m. is 8 p.m. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, I'm on this show, Tapestry, to talk about pop music and religious faith. I know about one of those things, but they asked me to be on the show, and it was fun. So listen to me on Tapestry, and that's it. Come out to St. John's, Newfoundland. Come out to the Hillside Festival. I'll be doing a live taping there, too. All right, just go do stuff. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.